Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on business continuity in the time of coronavirus. Companies across the country are facing questions about business continuity and disaster recovery. Topics like working remotely, crisis management, travel restrictions, and operational risk management are at the top of everyone's minds. Companies are being asked to dust off their business continuity plans and update them to reflect this particular situation. In this webinar today, we have a panel of agency executives and business continuity experts who are here to share their perspectives to help shed light on how companies should be managing themselves today. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountRecovery.net. AccountRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. David Katz is a partner at Adams & Reese, a national law firm. His practice encompasses privacy law and compliance, data security, data management, data governance, vendor management, corporate governance, crisis management, regulatory compliance, and ethics. He works closely with clients, counseling on the development, management, and oversight of privacy and compliance programs and vendor management programs. Prior to entering private practice, David served as a senior legal counsel and privacy manager in the corporate law department advising Aaron's Inc. He also served as a senior assistant district attorney for the Office of the District Attorney for Fulton County and as a senior assistant state's attorney in the Office of the State's Attorney for Baltimore City. David also served as country as captain in the Judge Advocate General Corps in the United States Army Reserve. Matt Kiefer is the Chief Officer of Information Compliance and Development at the Preferred Group of Tampa. Matt has been working in healthcare revenue cycle management since 1997. His 2 decades of experience specific to both first and third party collections and the unique challenges related to compliance and technology. Matt is a past president and now the current president again for the Florida Collectors Association, former membership director for the National Healthcare Collectors Association, member of HFMA, a 2-time national delegate, and a current member of the Healthcare Services Committee for the American ACA International. Jeremy Mapes is founder and president of Mapes Consulting, which is one of the very few vendors previously endorsed by ACA International as a preferred vendor and senior executive to Agent Z LLC. Jeremy has over 24 years in the ARM industry and has successfully headed operations and technology for companies from large to small, and has consulted to and supported well over 100 collection agencies and creditors on technology, automation, telephony, operations, and information security management, as well as consulting directly to multiple receivable software vendors. Courtney Renault is president at Creditors Bureau USA. She is a third-generation debt collector, and over the past 18 years, her career has allowed her to wear many different hats within the collection industry. Professional experience is rooted in the healthcare industry with a special understanding of law and consumer rights. Courtney is currently serving as president of the California Association of Collectors. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and when it has concluded. To submit a question, please hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountRecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everybody to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over. You should also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Most importantly, the question in the survey, along with sharing your feedback about the speakers and the topic, is an opportunity for you to share any ideas or topics you'd like to see addressed in an upcoming webinar. These are usually great ideas, so if there's anything you're looking to learn more about or are unsure of, please put it into the feedback survey and send it to me, and you'll probably see it in an upcoming webinar. Okay, with that, we can move on to our discussion. First, I want to go on record as saying that I'm not asking any of our panelists to be infectious disease experts. Not asking anybody to promote or propose or put themselves out as any expert in the disease or response to it. The intention for today's webinar is to have a discussion about business continuity in this new dynamic, how companies are responding, how companies should be responding, how companies should be looking at responding to what the challenges that are now being put forth before them on a daily basis. So with that, one of the things that has been most important, most popular, or the things you're reading about most as it relates to businesses today is remote working and working from home. So I'm curious, whether or not a business continuity plan for a company in the arm industry should have an opportunity for employees to work from home. Who should it be? Who should be allowed? Who should not be allowed? How should that be managed? Jeremy, let's start with you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm glad as always to be here and be in the discussion. Good morning, everyone. As far as working from home, that's one of my favorite topics that actually I was hit by two different companies this last week and more on the way. But that was one of the first things I got drawn into was companies that haven't done any remote working and what could they do? Because I think on everybody's mind, one of the biggest concerns with the current pandemic and the way the media is handling it, especially with schools closing, is the fear of employees having to be home, not because they're sick, but because they've got kids that they've got at home and they've got no place to put them. And I know that's on the topic of many companies' minds right now and what was shared with me of concerns. What do we do? We've got people that could work, but they need to be at home. And so is there a way that we can have them work at home? First of all, A, is it legal? B, is it possible with our technology? And is it the right thing to do? Can we do that? And so with that answer, I've actually had to address that before. My answer normally is yes, but that comes along with several things. Yes, can your technology do it? And that's about not only being able to get your collection information there securely, but a telephony path so that your people can call. And at the same time, on the third piece, which is I am not an attorney, and that we'll let David get into that, but I also recommend, and from past experience of what we've done at other companies, is that you need to look at a home office addendum with your attorneys to discuss how you secure that information, how your person secures that room, and also the risk of if you're going to have information coming into a non-company resource, such as if they're going to work off their third-party computer because you don't have laptops available, what that security needs to be, and work with your IT staff to look and see how they can secure that information. One company I worked with, they had thin clients and that they could remote out to different parties. And also in my past experience, working with companies like Aquin that had a national presence, they had thin client solutions so that they could emulate their software to, if they needed to a third party computer and be able to secure that information so that it could not be copied, so that it could not be worked. And in the cases of the larger clients, they'd also worked out a way and had it in their addendum for home office that they were allowed to view the home office, which some people think about that. They go, I don't know if we're going to be looking through somebody's webcam. But keep in mind, we're talking about if you're going to take it out to the level that you're not just dealing with operational and IT staff, that if you're dealing with home operators or agents, that you want to consider that a home office becomes, and this is an agreement that you're working out with them. The give and take is I'll let you work from home. That's the give. The take is I need to be able to know that you have a secure office at home. How do I do that? And so whether or not you're looking through the webcam, you may want to have the constructs to think about what are the permissions for me to look into your third party and look into your PC security, look into your home office, which should be separate from the rest of the house, and so that I'm not tripping over the legal issues, and that's where your attorneys need to be involved. But that is a growing concern if you don't have multiple sites. One of the other ones I talked to had multiple sites, so they're thinking they can balance that, but now that we have the national pandemic, that's becoming less of a, an opportunity. And then do we look at nearshoring and things like that, which is kind of last minute at this point. But those are things to consider along with talking to your telephony solution, which if you're using a cloud or outsourced phone solution, people like the TCN, the LiveVoxes of the world, they can get those solutions to get a path to your home office. So that's not a problem. The question is, how do you deliver that along with the data and how much data do you deliver to make that work? But I do see that as a viable solution. I'll let somebody else talk about that as well, because I'm sure there's a lot of other thoughts on that.
Yeah, Jeremy, this is Matt. I was just going to add, and the VoIP software, you know, like we use a cloud-based solution as well. And you might want to investigate. There are features like, you know, chat sessions, virtual meetings, and things like that. Your VoIP software, if it's cloud-based, might have, you know, some features like that, that you can meet collaboratively with teams and things like that. And then for small businesses that may not have that, you have, you know, things like freeconferencecall.com. I mean, that's obviously free for to set up, you know, a virtual meeting or something. But as far as remoting into TCN, you know, it's just like if there was a hurricane or something else going on, you just have to have a internet connection. So as long as your systems that you use are cloud-based, I think you're good to go. And I think you hit the other stuff right on the head, Jeremy. Knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, so it's Courtney. I also recognize I probably need to update my bio. I'm no longer president of California Association of Collectors. I'm the immediate past president, so sorry about that. I'll get that fixed. No big deal. One of the things that, I mean, I'm in California, so we just were struck on Friday with a mandatory school shutdown for a period of 30 days. Here in California, it's insane. At this point, I did hear that Washington is at 6 weeks right now. I don't know if that's all of Washington or certain areas, but our biggest concern is the employees, right? There's so many employees that work for me that have school-age children. And so trying to figure out how we can have them work from home. So that's going to depend on your security requirements, but we are SOC 2 Type 2 plus high trust. And so one of our big concerns with allowing employees to work from home is that I will need to supply the computers. I will also need to have my IT person out at their home to ensure that their home is conducive to homework. And then you choose where if they're home with their children who are home from school or daycares that are shut down, you're having to deal with employees that are working remotely that really might not be working to their full capacity or could potentially create a violation of FDCPA or HIPAA if they're trying to also watch their children at home. The other problem that we had, I thought about, maybe we can move some of our ancillary staff, allow them to work remotely. But how do you get your payment? The person who's posting all the money, they can't work from home. I mean, you can't have your processor, your payment poster working from home with posting checks and credit cards and cash. That's just not realistic. You really can't even have your bookkeeper working remotely because they really need to have those bills on hand in order to print the checks and send them out. There are still some paper checks we have to use. So if you're already set up for BPO and offshoring, you may also be running into issues where the government of those countries are doing mandatory shutdowns. And so I think at this point, we're all trying to work with what we have, and it's changing by the minute. So it's a little crazy, but we have not been able to figure out how we can have employees working from home, except for a few staff members that maybe have been here for a while, don't have adult children, things like that. And I did want to add one other thing. I don't know how many people are licensed in multiple states, but there are some requirements in the licensing and through NMLS, and I know they're trying to update that NMLS to allow for agents to work remotely, but I don't believe anything's been done at this point. So if you are having or thinking about having an agent work remotely from home, you may want to look at the state licensing requirements in the states that you're working.
This is David Katz, and Mike, thanks so much for having me on. There are a few things I want to add. I agree with everything that's been said. I thought, you know, there's some excellent analysis and advice in those comments. One of the things that we've been doing in our law firm is we've established a task force to address all of the legal issues that are arising as a result of the crisis, in addition to tracking all of the legislative developments and proposals that are occurring in Congress and things that the administration's doing one of the major issues that we started looking at from the beginning of this were the employment law issues around the obligations that you might have if an employee reports that they're ill, but also the issues around wage and hourly employee compliance and how someone that might be a wage and hourly employee, what effect it would have if they had to work from home or how that could be managed. And so we have a number of alerts that go into very significant specific detail on these issues at adamsandreese.com in the Explore offering section of the website, where you can go and begin to read about how this is affecting employment law issues at work and what effect it's going to have if your workforce has to become a remote. I would encourage people to take a look at that and to keep reviewing that site, because the laws are changing on a daily basis, and the things that the obstacles today or may not be obstacles in the next 24 to 48 hours, given how things are developing and how the government is trying to mitigate this as much as possible. So, you know, very fluid and very dynamic. The other thing I'll say, and I think folks, you know, obviously recognize the need within the government structure of your organization, of your company, to begin to try and address these issues outside the box, to form a team that can begin to think about how you'll address obstacles or challenges in terms of work or business continuity, and to really start to be creative about how the business will continue to operate. Because unfortunately, I don't think that business as usual will be the order of the day for many, many businesses. And it's going to take this kind of planning and quick response to be able to continue to be operational in some instances, unfortunately.
Thank you very much, everybody. I wanted to make a note to something Courtney was saying. I know some states have started to enact no action letters or no action policies or provide guidance about allowing companies that are licensed in certain states. I know Connecticut and Minnesota and Idaho, I think ACA International has put out information about each of those three states so far that have developed policies to allow licensed people to work from home. So certainly stay on top of whatever your state regulator is doing, and stay in touch with your trade groups, ACA International or RMA or NARCA or any of the other ones, because they're providing information as they get it as well. So let's continue to talk about this, because we are getting a lot of questions about sort of managing this whole work from home dynamic. So and one of the questions that has come in, and I'll use this as an opportunity to remind everybody, if you have a question for our panel, type it into the Q&A, hit the Q&A on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll try and get it asked before the end of our session today. One of the questions that's come in that I wanted to ask is specifically about outbound calls. How are you, I guess Matt and Courtney specifically, if you're willing to share, and Jeremy and Dave with the clients you have, companies that are looking to, that are sort of making outbound calls as well as managing inbound calls. Is there a difference when it comes to employees working from home and whether or not you're allowing them to handle one or the other or both types of calls?
This Jeremy, I guess I'll go first. From what I've been seeing, with this coming up, this pandemic is something new. And as far as business continuity goes, it's probably considered one of the worst case scenarios, because usually you can, especially in your medium to larger size agencies and other businesses, you can divert resources to other locations. Kind of like Courtney was saying with she's having trouble with the offshore. Worst case scenario is always, okay, if it shuts down everywhere, what do you do? Usually the answer was, well, if it shuts down everywhere, I guess we're all out of business. But that's not the case. We need to still, life is going on. We still need to work. So that's where, the home office solution and what's the bare necessity of people in the office coming in, as far as that, what do we do? And I'm sure Courtney and Matt will have more to say about what they're doing currently. But this is something that, even at the last minute with this, I think you can, if you find that you can and you're attorneys will allow you, and you find you have the technology to path it through, that your telephony groups, as far as inbound and outbound, normally you're going to worry about inbound first, but you're going to find that that those solutions are going to go take a path, a similar path, and a lot can port their inbound numbers over to a similar group for outbound, inbound, outbound, that they can receive on through a lot of the telephony solutions. So I don't necessarily see it as two different concerns. You got to still have heads on either one to be able to answer or make those calls.
Yeah, Courtney, we're not allowing anybody to work collector-wise remotely right now. My biggest concern is most of the people that will need to work remotely are also the reason that they would need to work remotely is because they need childcare. So I think what I'm looking for right now, my next phase, in fact, actually everybody is here in my office today that's scheduled to be here. But what we are doing, if this becomes a larger issue, my plan would be to see if I can hire a daycare provider or two daycare providers to come into my office. We have an entire downstairs area of our building that would be conducive to that. We don't have any child toys or anything like that, so I think everybody would have to bring stuff from home. But I think we are not allowing inbound traffic into our office as far as consumers coming in to pay. We have a sign on our door. Our doors are maglocked, so you can't get in. That's my next phase. I don't think, unfortunately, based on the reason that a collector would need to work from home, it being that they would need to watch their children, is going to be conducive for the type of debt that we collect. And as far as BPO, I know I have heard that Mexico is going to probably be closing theirs down. I'm not sure. I know several others. We talked about Jamaica still being up. I think that's what Jeremy was telling me. I know, I believe Nicaragua, I just read that they're going into mandatory shutdowns. I'm not certain for sure if that's the case. So if you are BPOing, that may not be a solution for you, which in the long term, unfortunately, if that's what you're holding putting your cards on is your BPO, you may discover or have already discovered that they're doing some shutdowns. Now, it may not be as long as, for example, California or Washington with our 30-day or 6-week with kids out of school, but it may be a week, maybe 2 weeks, who knows. But I would definitely, I would say that if you're thinking about allowing agents to work remotely, it's going to have to be on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, you can't have your brand new employee who just got hired a month ago working remotely in their house, even if they don't have children. You're going to have to worry about security, cybersecurity. What type of internet connections do they have? How are they connecting to your network? It may be a great time to reach out to ACA and increase your cybercrime policy. Those are all things I think each of us should be working on. I would also say, if you don't already have one, an inbound IVR for consumers to be able to make payments would be a great thing to work on if you don't have it already, or to make sure it's functioning properly. Also, your web payment portals, so that you can start directing consumers to your website if you don't end up with staff in the office able to help them, things like that. Chat bots, different ideas.
Mike, this is David. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, David.
I just wanted to add a couple comments and follow up. Specifically about, the existing vendors that may be providing telephony services or other services that you're going to be using in a different way as a result of this crisis, or you're going to be allowing people to use them either remotely or under a different process. One thing you want to do is review those agreements carefully to ensure that your correction doesn't end up in some way violating the agreement. The other point is that if you're going to be adopting new technology, obviously, in response to this crisis, and you want to make sure that you've reviewed that agreement in consideration of that new use or in the fact that it's going to be done remotely. And that can really save you some time and some heartache on the front end if you've done a good review agreement and adapted it for the current situation we're in.
This is Matt. We are letting employees out of necessity. We're letting some employees work from home and going to transition some others. The reason is, you know, mandatory quarantine for international travel on a couple and others that have childcare issues, you know, with school closures and things like that. One thing I do think you want to do is if you are going to secure laptops and have the employees work from home, you're going to probably want to source them out now, because I'm sure as more and more companies are forced to have their employees work from home, if they don't already have a company issued laptop, you're going to be looking at companies that rent them out, lease them. And, you know, don't forget about the small guys out there, like the, you know, Aaron's rent to own and stuff like that. Some of those have laptops as well, not to mention your disaster preparedness companies and things like that. So a quick Google search should be able to yield you some good results. But yeah, we are allowing employees to work from home, and either they're using a laptop, or you can remote in with something like TeamViewer. And our VoIP system is completely on the cloud, so it's just a matter of having a headset. So all the phone numbers and stuff that we use, caller ID, everything is in the TCN dialer or in our Pantera VoIP system.
Just wanted to give everybody a little update. I did just hear from somebody who's listening in, Nick Rushing down. So if anybody wants to reach out to Collect International, just throwing that out there. I just got a
awesome
text.
Excellent. We did get a question from the audience, and it's an interesting question. Has anyone on the seminar had a client request that you not make any phone calls and stop mailing customers? I guess if you have had that happen, submit a question or mention something in the chat, and happy to share that. But Matt, Courtney, is that something that you've heard of yet, or, you know, maybe in the bigger picture, what's been the interaction or communication you've had from your clients about sort of managing your operation through this situation?
Just keeping them informed, letting them know what we are doing, you know, as far as compliance and the security. But, you know, the show goes on, so we are still going to collect money. I guess you would handle it like any disaster situation. You know, if a tornado struck, you know, like Nashville, you avoid calling those particular area codes and things for the time being. But we have not been instructed or directed to not make any calls right now. And again, I think this thing is in its infancy in the United States. So, you know, we got months to go for this thing to finally get away.
Yeah, we haven't had any. Sorry, it's Courtney. We haven't had any requests yet. We are having. I anticipate it will probably come down the pipeline at some point, just like any of our other disaster response. When there's been floods, tornadoes, or fires, we do get those requests from our clients to, you know, especially zip code areas and certain places that are most impacted. We haven't received anything yet, but like I said, I anticipate we will probably start getting some requests.
This is Jeremy. I've got, as a matter of fact, the majority of my clients have healthcare clients that they work for. And in that space, it's very common for them to want to stop or you know, lessen in the effect of sometimes like these where there's some type of epidemic going on. I suggest a proactive method on that out to the clients. I'd get ahead of it. And what I find works best before they come and say, well, you need to shut down or we need to stop things for a month or 2 months, I get ahead of them and say, look, we've got a plan in place so that we're taking into consideration. That's a big thing when you're talking about non-for-profits and healthcare clients is, hey, we're taking into consideration when we're talking to the consumers right now. We've got a pandemic plan in place that says, hey, if we're getting pushback because they're off work temporarily, that maybe we're taking that into account. We're asking for post dates as opposed to them having to make the payment today. We understand you're going to be out for 2 weeks. Let's set a post date check or credit card for that future payment. How can we work with you so that they understand that you're not being abrasive, that you're trying to work with their staff? I think that goes a long ways if you get ahead of the curve on that.
Okay. You know, if you've still got, you know, since you still have employees in the office and you still have people coming in and out, are you doing anything differently With respect to the request for social distancing, sort of keeping employees further apart? Are you, sort of staggering when people come in the office, when people leave the office, when people are working in the office, when people are in the lunchroom? Are you doing, in a call center, you may have employees working in close quarters with each other. Are you doing anything differently to sort of give them more space, or is everything right now still business as usual inside the office? Matt, would you mind going first?
Sure. I think right now it's just a matter of promoting good hygiene, hand washing. Even without coronavirus, you'd be surprised how many people go into the restroom and use it and then don't, wash their hands after. So it just makes good sense to arm everybody with information and facts. And, we have a hand sanitizer station when you come in, and you wash your hands before and after opening the door, sanitize your hands, and then anything that any surface that could be touched, we have a lot armed with Lysol, so we're spraying down. But just keeping, good hygiene all around the office. If somebody's sick, we're asking them, to go ahead and stay home, not to get other people sick, and we're setting people up to work from home, like I said before. So that's what we're doing.
And for offices, this is Jeremy, for offices, I find it interesting because I was on site at clients' offices Thursday and Friday outside my state. And at the first office, they shook hands, but they had the Purell bottles in their other hand ready to spray us both down. At the next office, it was the elbow bumps. So it's in the back of everybody's mind, you can see, but they're taking precautions. They at most offices where they have Purell and everything else available, they're being gracious of people's spaces where normally maybe when you're working with staff, you might be leaning over them, looking at what they're working on and so forth, that people are maintaining spaces. But I think from what I've seen, it's been with all the media out there, it's been natural that you don't even have to say anything. People are taking natural precautions. But, to bring that into your environment and have, everything from Kleenex to Purell and a lot of the environments I was working with, they are very proactive on, hey, if you don't feel good for any reason at all, please go. Don't give it to the rest of us. We understand. Take care of yourself first and don't get everybody else sick.
Yeah, very similar here. I mean, we've obviously been doing a mass push for general sanitization. We have provided every employee with a workstation cleaning kit, that they can keep at each of their workstations, which includes, wipes to wipe down the surfaces and their work surfaces, gloves to put on for certain more difficult cleaning products that we might have, their own mask that's at their workstation, things like that. Because it is they have to clean at their own workstation. So we're asking them to do that before they, at least before they leave each day. Common areas are being shared, and we do have a janitorial service that comes in and does some deep cleaning each night. So we're continuing that. I think the big thing right now is there's no toilet paper at the stores, and so we're trying to get more toilet paper in the office so I can send my staff home with toilet paper, which is really pretty sad.
Sad, and I think very nice that you're trying to do that. David, I wanted to talk about one of the things that's been triggered now that this has been classified or defined as a pandemic. The Americans with Disability Act has some provisions in it that give employers some different rights. Maybe you could spend a minute talking about that.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on the ADA, but there is a provision that ensures that the affected employee will not be identified by name to their coworkers as having contracted the virus. That would run afoul of the ADA, but that is an area that we've also been covering very closely in addition to the changes that have been recently published. So again, that's on our website as well with a full write-up of how those rules affect employers. So you can find that at adamsandreese.com.
And if you're logged in, it's right there at the bottom link on the resources page that's in the presentation right now is a link to the Adams and Reese briefing. On that. Jeremy, I wanted to follow up with something you mentioned before with regards to if you're sick, stay home, which I think is great. Do you see or do you recommend employers make any changes to their sick time policy as a result of what's going on now?
Well, I think they're, especially with how the feds have been reacting to it, trying to make I've seen that the employers have been taking a step forward as well. You know, I not that they're giving extra paid time off, but where they may require a doctor's note back immediately afterwards, they understand that it's hard to get in the doctors now. So people are on the spot making provisions for that, you know, as far as concessions and understanding. Could you have people that take advantage of the notion that they could be at home and take the day off? Sure. But, you know, we have to take the larger possibility that, you know, we don't want to risk the environment. And it just is, it's, you know, good for the fellowship of the office that, you know, if somebody says that they don't feel well, that we take them at their word at this point and allow them to go home, because they're probably not going to be productive if you force them to stay anyway. But I've also even seen on a couple of bases, it's not the common one, but I think there were some agencies out there that had some interesting ideas, knowing that the bigger part being children was going to be their concern because they have lots of employees with children that don't have a place to put them. I actually did know of a couple of sites where they were actually bringing in and procuring, since they had office space to do it, a segmentation where they could have a place for the children and daycare and bring in daycare professionals to take care of them on the spot. Now, that's amazing. Not everybody has that luxury, but I thought that was a neat and an excellent way of getting people who aren't sick to stay at work and focus on work because they're not worried about their kids at home.
Yeah, and that's something okay. We've been considering as well, but I do think you have to keep it below that 50 number, so you can't probably have more, at least in one room, you want to try to keep less than 50 people in a specific area.
Someone asked that question, Courtney, about how you were going to manage that in the way, you know, sort of, you know, in respect to keeping that number under that sort of 50-person limit that a lot of states have instituted for gatherings.
So I've pretty much identified that I have about 8 employees with school-age children that may or may not have an issue getting childcare. And so, you know, assuming each employee has, let's call it an average of 2 children, maybe in some cases 3 that might fall in that requirement, we would be under that 50 number. So that is one way that we would be able to do that if we ended up needing to bring that in. At this point, it doesn't appear to be an issue, but I don't know how much longer it will not be an issue. So we're definitely keeping that on the back burner. And as we were talking about our clients not asking us to make outbound calls or send letters, I got an email from a client asking us not to send outbound, make outbound calls or send letters. So, you know, thanks whoever jinxed me on that one.
Sorry about that. we did get a question that I thought is interesting, and I wanted to put it to the panel just to see if they had any input. If you sort of close your business and have employees are working from home, I guess close your business, I don't mean sort of shut it down, but if you have employees working from home, do you have to offer it to all of employees? Is that something that needs to be done, or is that something that can be done on an employee-by-employee basis?
No, I think that there's clear guidelines that does not have to be offered to all employees. I think that you can't discriminate which employee you're going to offer it to. So there has to be some clear guidelines as to why you would approve or why you would deny somebody the opportunity to work from home. For example, I've identified that debt collectors probably should not be working from home. And so if a debt collector comes to me and says, hey, I'd like to work from home, I've identified that really no debt collectors should work from home. And so if I decided to change that to allow for certain collectors to work from home, I might be able to say it's based on length of service in our organization. Of course, it would have to be based on what type of internet connection and how the location can be secured. Cost-wise, it would also depend on if I can procure a computer system that they would be able to use. So that's how we would be handling it.
Just a quick follow-up on that. I thought that was a great answer. And from a legal perspective, I mean, that is absolutely something you'd want to have documented well and in writing as much as possible in advance of being asked, which at this point may be difficult, but having well-articulated reasons for why people should be treated differently is, I think, going to be.
A question. I'm not sure. Has anybody had anyone in their county or city that's been affected? And if so, has that altered any changes or altered anybody's business continuity plans?
We have two in Fresno County. They were both travel related, not contact related. They have been identified that, and I do believe they were both off of a cruise ship that went home and did a mandatory quarantine. There is one in Madera County, and that has been identified. And again, they were self-quarantining from coming back from a cruise ship. So we haven't had any transmission that's non-travel related at this point. So we haven't really adjusted our plans, although they did close down the schools for a month on Friday. So most of my effort has been focused on staff retention at this point.
This is Matt. I know we've had a couple, I think, identified in Hillsborough County. Now, that was as of last week. I really haven't paid attention to the news much this weekend. Yeah, I believe there are some positive cases in the Sarasota and Tampa area. I haven't really checked Orlando. Jeremy, do you know about Orlando?
I believe Orlando's had a couple come up too, but I believe it was transient cases, and of course I kind of keep up with Tampa since you're just next door to us, but yeah. I think you've had some there, but it didn't seem like it was out of control yet. You know, we're in the vacationing area, so it's very common for it to come up here. So I think people are you know, as far as most operations around here, people are just maintaining space and trying to, you know, follow clean habit procedures to try to make sure that it doesn't get moved around. But there's, you know, the one of the concerns of this type of transmission, not being an expert on it, but the discussion's been brought up in the news, if you've watched it, that this virus may transfer in younger people. I think it was 20 something or less, without any symptoms. They may be asymptomatic and it transfers. So, you know, whether they're showing symptoms or not, people are just conducting themselves in a method that that they assume everybody, you know, everybody could have it, and that you're maintaining space, you're keeping clean, and that's about all you can do, unless you find that there's a hodgepodge in your area that's coming down with it, and then still you have to find a way to deal with it and maintain operations.
Gotten a couple of questions about the links that people are seeing on one of the slides in the presentation. That's looping, so every few minutes it should come back up again. If you want to copy them down, if you want, you can send me an email. I'm happy to send you the links themselves in an email. Just shoot me an email, and I can have to send that over to you once the webinar is over. I've got another question about employees who travel or have traveled recently. Is there anything that a company or an agency should do differently with those employees? Should they enforce self-quarantine? Should they make them work in a different part of the office? Is there anything that a company should do differently if they have employees who, for whatever reason, work or for pleasure, traveled recently in the last couple of weeks?
This is Matt. Like I mentioned before, we did, and we pre-planned for this because the person was going to travel internationally, but we did pre-plan and set that person to work remotely once they came back from overseas. And they'll be quarantined for 14 days. So,
right. So on national travel at this point, I wouldn't be concerned about them so much. But going through airports Thursday and Friday, like I was saying to somebody before this, I was speaking, and I was mentioning the fact that when I traveled Thursday and Friday, the airports are the quietest you've ever heard them. Now, that's not to say there's not people there. There's almost as many. Probably it's at probably three quarter population when I went through Atlanta. It's still quite a few people traveling there, but here again, people are maintaining space. You never heard anybody cough or sneeze. And kind of the joke I made was, I think people are afraid to cough or sneeze because we know that we've got the March allergies out there and everything else, just super quiet, and people wiping down their areas, carrying wipes with them. So I don't know that I think that you're going to have somebody successful just because they flew on a local or national plane that they're going to have be an automatic suspect for being quarantined. Just stay up with what's going on, maintain your distance. I think it's the same, whether they were at home with a bunch of kids that could that they could get it from, to somebody that's been on an airplane between Orlando and Ohio.
This is David. I think you have to really closely monitor even domestic travel to some of these hotspots, Seattle, for example, the New York area, and the HR department needs to be very involved in the travel of individuals to these areas and coordinating with them, upon return, if a quarantine is required or necessary, and to really take a look at whether non-essential travel should be carried out at this point at all, as a measure of being safe and keeping employees safe.
Yeah, we are, I would say I agree with everyone on that. Unless somebody's traveling to a known hotspot location, and I wouldn't say all of Washington, right? Specifically Seattle, specific areas that have a large number of people that are impacted, you might change your opinion, or we might all change our opinions. But when you're looking at, if somebody traveled today, if anybody was at the ACA conference in Las Vegas, I think at the time there was only 6 cases. I think that has grown, but it was at a different location, different hotels. Again, the risk is still incredibly low traveling throughout the U.S. versus traveling to Italy or Europe or anywhere in obviously China.
Okay. Another question that's come in, if this particular agency has asked its salespeople not to come into the office because they're going out into physician's office, that may be a risky situation. And the question is, are there any other agencies that are doing the same?
We are not allowing our salespeople to go out into client offices right now, but that doesn't mean that they're not sitting downstairs and not going in. They're just not going into clients' offices in order to drop off donuts or whatever they do. I'm not a salesperson, you can tell. So I'm sure they do more than that, but no. So we have put a lockdown on travel to clients' offices, but they are still in our office working, talking to clients, things like that.
Okay, good insight. We've talked a little bit about sort of components of a business continuity plan. David, I'm wondering maybe if we could talk a little bit sort of more broadly about a business continuity plan and the fundamentals of one. I'm not sure that everybody listening or watching today has one or has a complete one. So maybe we can address, sort of what a business continuity plan is and sort of what the scope of one should include.
Yeah. Simply, the business continuity plan is a document that the business has taken the time to run through and to coordinate among various different departments of how the business will continue to operate in the event of an incident. So one example, at least in this scenario, is the reliance on independent third parties to be providing services in the supply chain. So, identifying alternate providers, for example, reviewing agreements to ensure that if there's a disruption, what steps need to be taken to either find alternative sourcing or to negotiate additional provisions in those agreements. What staff is going to be required in the event that people are unavailable to perform their work functions. So the business continuity plan is really a description of how the business is going to be operating in the event of an event that causes a disruption. Business continuity plans can range from anything to just the physical activities in the office to the technical resources that are required to run the business. But again, given this crisis, they likely need to be updated to account for the facts of this particular event. The business has to evaluate if the time spent kind of updating that plan or modernizing it or updating it can be done and still sort of run the business effectively.
And this is Jeremy. If you want a template or to go by for business continuity as a general plan, not just for this, but for everything, you know, whether it has to be everything from hardware to people to the name brand, I might suggest something like the ISO, an international standard. There's one 22301 out there. It used to be BS, British Standard 25999. And it's a good, you know, if you need some place to start, it's a good template to start with, to start looking at your what your company is doing, its assets, as far as what, and not just information assets, but an asset is how is it productive with its clients, how it relates to risk factors, everything from sales staff going down to bad publicity, but to be able to basically plan for events such as this, or a hurricane, or the next event. I know down here in Tampa, you know, with Matt in Tampa and myself in Orlando, we're used to dealing with, you know, business continuity plans as it deals with our sites going down. But it's a good thing to get into for all reasons, whether it be for weather, pandemic events, or otherwise, so that you don't get caught off guard. Such as, you know, it would have been a good 6 months ago. If people are looking at, can I legally have an outsource my staff, or can I legally put them at home offices temporarily if I need to make that work? You know, those things probably would have been better thought up 6 months ago rather than having to try to figure it out a week ago. But that's something to get, you know, this is a good time to get started with it.
And I'd just add to that, if you're not already doing business in the cloud with, you know, cloud, whether it's your dialer or your collection software or whatever systems and stuff you use, now's a good time to think about it. I mean, maybe a little too late right now, but working in the cloud is a really good thing.
Good advice. There's a question here that I'm not sure anyone's going to be able to answer, but I think it's an interesting discussion. The question is, do we have any bare bones back of the envelope estimates for the impact of COVID-19 or coronavirus on businesses in the United States? And I know the Fed did some things yesterday, slashed its target rate, and some other countries are following suit to try and keep the economies running smoothly across the world. I'm curious if anybody, I know we're still sort of knee deep in everything, and who knows for how long this is going to go. And we talked about how everything's changing by the hour, but I'm curious if anybody has made any estimates or sort of altered their plans for 2020 because of what's gone on in the last week and the impact that it's likely to have for the foreseeable future. Are you making any sort of strategic changes? Are you rethinking things that you were going to do because of what's going on right now?
This is Matt. We revisited the whole work from home policy, a month ago or so, in to plan for this and going forward. And the reality is, I think for companies that can have employees work from home, you know, it's less space you have to take up, less office space that you have to rent, things like that. But yeah, I think this is going to go on for months. And then, you know, they say you can get it again. I mean, it's going to be a little bit worse than the flu, a lot worse than the flu, but I think it's in its infancy right now.
I don't think we have any idea what the long-term impact of this is going to be, unfortunately. It's happening very quickly. So I think it's going to be a long time before we really know the full impact of this.
This is Jeremy. I think the big part right now is, you know, the one thing the company should be planning is that the revenue stream probably won't be as high as they'd planned it for forecasted for 2020. I mean, you kind of got to figure that this is going to play into that from both sides, not just your staffing, but what you could do as far as collections on the other side. So I'm sure there will be many agencies and companies out there that will be running the ship tight. We always run it tight anyway in the collection industry, it seems. But you know, they're probably not going to be making extra purchases that are outside of making the business run. I've already seen people kind of tightening up on that. They may be holding off on that next printer or whatever it might be that they need to get, just to make sure that they have money in the coffers that they can keep themselves going if there's, if there is a strain on the environment for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I agree. We're holding off on purchases. Unless it's related to security or automation, we're kind of holding off on that. Otherwise, I have no idea how it's going to impact businesses. I know here in California, things are really crazy. The governor just kind of came out yesterday saying that he wants to require mandatory quarantining for anybody over the age of 65, and also shutting down bars, wineries, and restaurants. So I imagine we're going to see a run on the food sources here in California if that goes into effect, not to mention the alcohol. So if you guys haven't bought alcohol, go get it now. I say that jokingly, but it's that I think is the big issue is that I mean, at least here in California, we have our governor that's gone way outside of the norm or anything. I mean, if you have any employee over the age of 65 that's still working for you, I mean, they might have to be mandatorily quarantined at home and you to come into the office, which is actually a super low age, in my opinion. But
you know, the thing I've seen online a number of times, and I think it's been repeated and shared, so everybody's probably heard it by now. But you know, we'll never know if we over prepared, but it's going to be very easy to tell if we under prepared for this. So I think that rings true for the steps that everybody is taking. So we've hit the top of the hour. We're technically out of time, but what I'd like to do is maybe go around the panel and give each of our panelists a chance to share any parting thoughts, any concluding remarks, summary of what they said, or maybe reinforcing something they said, or even something they wanted to address but didn't get a chance to because the conversation didn't head that way, but just a chance to share some concluding remarks from our panel, if they don't mind. Jeremy, would you mind going first?
I could do that. I don't think I have a lot of extra remarks. I think, obviously, everybody out there is being vigilant. It's obviously on everybody's mind. The big part is to don't get wound up in the media and the hype. I would take things, you know, as they come, except plan for the worst as much as possible. So, you know, I would look at my technology structure. I would make sure that if there's anybody that I can put in a home position or home office position, then that may be an easy consideration. I know people brought up travel a lot, domestic travel being concerning even. At some point, people will have to revisit, but, you know, I think a lot of it's common sense. As far as what you need to do, the technology parts can be helped with if you can have home office work. That's actually in this day and age is a fortunate thing. But otherwise, you know, make sure that you stock up on Purell do safe health procedures as far as communicating in the office and as far as people being around each other.
Excellent. Appreciate it. Thank you. David.
Yeah, I would just again say that, you know, these events are dynamic and our lawyers are looking at all of the issues that are being generated as a result of this from a legal perspective. And we're working night and day to be able to digest those and get them on our website. So there's an easy place for you to go and reference these sources and resources so you can affect some decision making in your own business.
Thank you very much, David. Matt?
Yeah, I have to concur with Jeremy on the whole media over sensationalizing this whole thing. Remember, you're not dying from the virus. They're dying from comorbidities associated with respiratory illness and, you know, people who smoke, people who are at higher ages and things like that. So, you know, the media has done a terrific job of concocting a lot of stuff and sensationalizing everything it can. But this seems to be the only way to take down the stock market. So it's a I hate to get political on this, but just don't drive and buy into all the hype with the media. Just be safe and be practice good hygiene.
I was afraid to say it, but I concur.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Courtney?
I'm just going to piggyback on what everybody else said. You know, start looking at who in your office can possibly work remotely from home. Start determining if that includes your collectors. Check with your service providers. If you have agents that you're working in a call center here in the States or overseas, or, you know, anywhere, to really make sure that there's plans in place for how managing this pandemic, I guess. You know, and practice safe hygiene. Keep processing and telling your staff to practice safe hygiene, washing hands, providing the Purell. You know, if you can get some large quantities of toilet paper from a sanitary supply, maybe send everybody home with a roll. I think those are the big things, and stick together. You know, we're all in this together. Let's not make this a crazy situation that it's any more than it already is. You know, offer help where you can, take help when you need it. I think this is going to be at least a few months before we start seeing some relief. I mean, that's my hope, but we really don't know long term. So stay safe.
I echo the last remarks. Stay safe, everybody. Courtney, Matt, David, Jeremy, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. As we've talked about, this is an incredibly fluid and ever-shifting topic, and you guys handled it with expertise and deftness, and I really appreciate it taking the time to share with us today. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. Stay tuned to accountrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Really appreciate everybody's time today. Hope everyone stays safe, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon. Panel, excellent job. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Great afternoon.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.